This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Harriet Williamson is the producer for the program. Jason Croft is at the controls for this hour. And Kyle Mabry was on for hour number one. We're coming to you on WILL AM. We're also on the website, webcasting this morning at WILL.illinois.edu. So good morning to everyone who is listening, and good morning to folks who are watching. It's estimated that about a third of American adults are obese, putting them at greater risk for conditions like heart disease and stroke and diabetes and some cancers. We also know that weight is not just an adult problem in this country. According to the Centers for Disease Control, approximately 17% of American children and adolescents between the ages of 2 and 19 are obese, and that's 12.5 million young people. In fact, since 1980, obesity among children and adolescents has almost tripled. Now, that's all of the bad news. The good news is that healthy eating, physical activity can lower the risk of becoming obese and developing related diseases. And this morning on the program, we'll be talking about what some schools here in our region are doing to teach kids healthy habits. We have three guests, and I'll introduce them in just a moment. First, though, we want to bring you a report that's part of our Will Connect media engagement initiative on health and wellness. Freelance reporter Lisa Braddock visited a public school in Danville that has received national recognition for its vision and team approach to improving the health of its students.
We won a golden award and a silver award.
That's 9-year-old Brooklyn Konecki, who still remembers the day last December that her school, Northeast Elementary Magnet School in Danville, won a national award.
It makes me very proud of our school.
We feel better because we're at a healthy school, so then we feel good about ourselves. Like, some other schools will look up to us and think, man, they're really fit and small, so we should do that.
That was Noah Heil and Adam Long. Both are 10-year-olds at Northeast Elementary. Their school won the Alliance for a Healthier Generation's gold medal in 2010. The Alliance is a national nonprofit organization focused solely on reducing the prevalence of childhood obesity across the United States. Northeast Elementary is the first elementary school in the country to win the gold medal. Alliance CEO Jenny Ehrlich explains why.
You really feel a palpable difference when you walk into that school. You know they care about health and wellness. You know that they believe that good health and learning go hand in hand.
All right, so repeat after me. Basketball shooting.
Basketball shooting.
Goes to basketball dribbling.
Goes to basketball dribbling.
Basketball dribbling goes to yarn balls.
The work at Northeast Elementary began 4 years ago when the staff decided to commit to a school environment of health and wellness and involve parents, students, and staff in the initiative.
Watch a stopwatch, and every 3 minutes I will move you, okay? That's your cue to move.
Physical education teacher Becky Burgoyne explains one reason the approach at Northeast works.
As a former classroom teacher, I know how important it is to have those students get the exercise, blow off the steam, get some fresh air when it's possible, and then they come back, they're ready to learn again.
In addition to the exercise the students receive as part of their gym class, teachers integrate health and wellness into their subjects. Speech therapist Kate Cox explains her thinking process.
Where can I add movement in to goals I'm already working on? Instead of sitting around a table and getting out a bunch of cards, can I get them up and moving?
Cox uses word scavenger hunts and Simon Says to help students work on following directions.
Which is huge, because if you're not focusing, you're not getting the directions anyway.
Fifth grade teacher Lisa Unziker assigned a social studies research project on the topic of food deserts.
On this, and I have some students who want to share with you exactly what a food desert is. And my first one is, what is a food desert?
What is a food desert? A food desert is a community which residents must travel at least a mile to buy fresh meat, dairy products, fruits, and vegetables. It is where at least 20% of people live below the poverty line, and at least 33% live a mile or more from the nearest supermarket.
Eating healthy foods is a high priority at Northeast Elementary. More than half the 274 students enrolled at the school receive free lunches. Deborah Berlin, kitchen manager, shares the day's menu.
Breaded chicken nuggets, baked beans, salad, cinnamon applesauce, and then we have our juice and milk. Oh, it's all reduced fat. The chicken nuggets are reduced fat. We don't fry anything. It's all baked.
Principal Cheryl McIntyre says that their fruits and vegetables program is a big hit with students and parents.
Our fresh fruits and vegetable program that we've been able to have here has been such a key to our kids and our families. And overwhelmingly, our parents talk about how much that means to the kids.
The hard work that goes into sustaining and expanding the health and wellness focus continues even after winning the gold. Known as the Healthy School, there is already a waiting list for next year's admission. I'm Lisa Braddock for Illinois Public Media.
For more information on Northeast Elementary School's program, photos, and links to the Alliance for a Healthier Generation, you can visit our website. That's willconnect.org. Our media engagement initiative on health and wellness is funded in part by a grant from the Lumpkin Family Foundation. Well, this is Focus, and we're very happy to have here in studio with us several guests, and we'll try to talk a little bit about schools and their approach to the issue of childhood obesity. And here, sitting next to me, is Craig Gunderson. He's professor in the Department of Agricultural and Consumer Economics at the U of I and has done some research on the issue of obesity and generally on food insecurity and the problem of hunger in the United States. Cheryl McIntyre is here. She's principal of Northeast Elementary School in Danville. We're pleased that she's here. Also, Wendy Starwall. She's coordinator for elementary physical education for Unit 4 schools, and she's also coordinator for the CATCH program at Cary Busey School in Champaign, and it's something we'll talk some more about. But in brief, it's a partnership that they have formed with the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, and other schools are doing the same kind of thing. And the idea generally is to promote physical activity for students and their families. So we'll talk. Questions are welcome. You can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455, or we can take questions by email. You can do that as well. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, thanks very much for being here, all of you. We definitely want to say for Cheryl McIntyre, congratulations on the award that you all won.
Thank you very much. It was a lot of work and a big commitment, and I'm very, very proud of my staff, students, and parents.
And this is now something that you had been working on for several years, right?
Yes. They began the year before I became the principal, and then this is my fourth year as a principal at Northeast, and we've worked over that period of time to get where we are today and have won a year ago the Gold Award.
Yeah. What was it that, as a matter of policy, that you decided to do this?
The magnet school, we're in our 15th year as a magnet school, and it was founded on focusing on reading and math. And they were at the point that they felt like that they wanted to expand. And the health and wellness was what the staff as a group decided was an important focus for them and decided that that's where what they wanted to look at.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you have done a number of things. You're interested in incorporating into the curriculum health concerns. I know that you've increased the amount of time that children spend in physical education. So you're doing stuff to try to get them moving. You've also looked at the food that you're serving there in the cafeteria. So we can talk about all of those things. Was any one of those things you think particularly important, or is it important that you're doing all of that?
I think it all plays a piece. We have worked with Alliance for a Healthier Generation is really the framework that we have followed. They made the decision to go with the Alliance before I came to Northeast, and they've been a wonderful resource to us. And so they had really named the topics and the standards that to fulfill their requirements you needed to follow. And mm-hmm. It includes all of those things, school meals, health education, physical activity. We had to go standard by standard and make sure that we are meeting their criteria.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to turn to Wendy Starwald. Is this particular issue, that is children, their health, whether they're active or not, what their weight is it something that you have been devoting more attention to?
Oh, absolutely. We have been committed for 4 years also at Cary Busey, but our program is the CATCH program, which is Coordinated Approach to Child Health. We talked earlier, Cheryl and I, that it's the same premise. It's the coordination of food service, the home connection, the community connection, physical activity, and then nutrition education in the classroom. And we feel with a crisis in our nation that the coordination of that, we can get to it at school. That's the best way to impact the youth for today is with our school programs. And, you know, nobody can argue that this is crucial right now in our country, that we address these issues with our kids. Things have changed. We're not sure why, but we're trying to basically put more activity back in and get back to eating the kinds of foods that would make our kids healthier.
Mm. I want to turn to Craig, because I know that you've done some research on this, and I think that it's something that probably defies a simple explanation, and that it turns out that it's, you know, the issue of why it is generally people are getting heavier, but why is it the kids are getting heavier? It's turns out to actually be more complicated than it would seem.
Right. It is a very complicated situation. So before beginning, I wanted to say that I'm here predominantly on behalf of the ITOP program, which is the Illinois Transdisciplinary Obesity Prevention Program. I'm an investigator with that. So obesity, childhood health are all multifaceted. The determinants of obesity or overweight are multifaceted, and within our group, we're trying to figure out different ways we can address this. We have a transdisciplinary group of researchers. One thing that, you know, whenever we look at this, and I'm going to talk a little bit later if I have a chance about the National School Lunch Program and its role in reducing childhood obesity, you know, there's so many different factors, whether it be genetics that are influencing whether or not a child is overweight, whether it be the school environment. But, you know, something we can never overlook is a role of stress. One of the key determinants of obesity in the United States is stress. Children are under a lot more stress than they used to be, and this has been increasing over time. That might be one of the key reasons why obesity has been increasing in the United States. So programs to address stress are really important. I want to turn to some of those later on. Mm-hmm. One other key thing that I want to mention, though, is that obesity rates have plateaued over the last 15 years. So you mentioned earlier that there was a threefold increase, but over the past 15 years, there's been no increase in childhood rates of obesity. So I want to look on the plus side. All the great efforts of Cheryl and Wendy and others to help address this problem have paid dividends. It's plateaued. And so I think that while I'm not diminishing the importance of addressing these issues, I do want to say that things are better, are good.
Yeah. I think that I imagine when people think about this, we just said, well, it's complicated. But I'm sure that one thing that people think about is the simple amount of physical activity that the kids have. And we have this idea that, well, you know, calories in, calories out. I mean, that people, if they were more active, they wouldn't have those issues. And I know that one of the things that you've done there over in Danville is that you actually have increased the amount of time in a week that kids are doing physical activity by about 10 minutes more a day than you had been doing?
Yes, we have done several things. Our kids receive 30 minutes of PE every day, and that's not common. And we had to work really hard to make that happen, especially since our gym is also our cafeteria. So it shuts our gym down for, you know, an hour to an hour and a half a day. So we worked very hard to put that in our schedule. But the requirements and the, again, standards of the Alliance for a Healthier Generation is that you have 2 10-minute physical activity breaks in the classroom during the day. So at any given time, you can walk in and they may be doing a math lesson. And for example, I always use the example of a geometry lesson that they're learning about angles and we're up and moving and using their body to make those angles. So you'll see that happen. You may look up and see one of my third grade classes walks the building, and that's their 10-minute break that they get up and actually move throughout the building. So it's very creative how each teacher has involved that into their day, but that's the expectation.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting approach. When I was at that point in school, certainly there was PE and there was recess, mm-hmm. so that there was a time to get up, leave the classroom, go outside and run around, but there was that time. So for the rest of the time, we were sitting there, most of the rest of the time we were sitting there, and there was this one period when that was the time to go out and do that. And I think it's really interesting that you have integrated it into the day in that way, as I'm sure that among other things, it maybe helps actually with student concentration during those times that you actually do want them to be working hard.
Yes, absolutely. You know, they are up and moving, but they're also Connecting that to a lesson, you know, I've seen math facts be done to a skip and a hop and a jump motion, and they just make those connections. So it's been very fun to see that happen.
Yeah. Well, how much time do your students spend in physical activity?
They have physical activity every third day for 40 minutes. So it is not it's not really at an acceptable level, but ours will come down to personnel. There is not enough personnel to cover every child to have physical education class every single day. That's the issue. But the interesting thing is, even in the past 20 or 25 years, the amount of time has not changed. It wasn't as if 20 years ago kids in the elementary schools were in our district were getting daily physical education. They were not. You know, so it's kind of like what Craig said. I mean, it's complicated, but yet people think, oh, has it really dropped off? Well, really not in Illinois. It's been mandated, and we've always had physical education, and our numbers, our minutes have not dropped off. Other factors play into it. In my head, it is after school that has had quite an impact. Kids don't have access to play outside of school as much. Now that a lot of parents both work and kids go to other programs after school, they might not be physically active after school, as opposed to, I would say, the old days when I got home and I hit the door until I heard it was dinner, and then after dinner we hit the door outside again. I mean, really, that doesn't happen anymore for various reasons, partially for after-school programs, partially because kids may not have safe places to run out and go do that. Neighborhood situations become a problem for our kids. We are even to the point where we have to teach recess at the beginning of the school year because kids don't have the skills to like get a flag football game going on their own. You know, you have to like set them up and organize it for them because they're not used to doing that outside of the structure of having a teacher there, because it's not happening in the park or the backyard as frequently. So it's interesting.
And
I absolutely agree with that. I think that we have seen our kids do very different things with all the technology that they have and the computer games and the video games. I think a lot of our kids today spend time doing that as opposed to going outside and playing like we did as kids. And I agree with Wendy that we had to teach recess as well, that they're not quite sure, you know, what to do in those organized situations.
Yeah, that's really, I don't quite know what to make of that fact that you actually have to teach recess because you'd tell them to, okay, go outside, and they go out there and they stand there and they don't exactly know what to do, or at least not in some sort of organized, if in organized fashion.
Right.
I think we have this idea, though. I go back to the idea that the big problem is that in their free time that kids are spending a lot of time in front of some kind of screen. A computer or some kind of thing like that, and that's taken the place of going out and running around outside. Is that true?
I haven't seen convincing evidence of that, because kids used to do like watch a lot of TV and stuff, and this maybe substituting. I mean, I think there's three key factors that have been talked about in the literature. It's the first, fewer kids are walking to school, and this could be. I mean, for a lot of kids, and they may, you know, there's a different ways of structuring who goes to what school, and a lot of kids are no longer by their neighborhood school, so they can't even walk even if they wanted to. The number of children today who walk to school is far less than there used to be. And coming back to what you had said, is that there's a lot of children who, after school, no longer can go out and play, but rather they have to come home because both parents may be working outside the home. So that's a major structure. I mean, as you know, there has been some parallels between overweight increasing and the number of two-parent households who are both working at the same time, or single-parent households where one person has to work. So those are definitely factors playing into this. You know, the one thing I do want to mention again is that children are under a lot more stress than they used to be, and I think that's a major contributor to some of these problems of obesity, and that's what we found in our research on this topic.
Yeah. What types of stress are you referring to? I'm interested.
Well, we think about it in many different ways. For example, we looked some of our work, as we talked about, like families who were evicted from their homes. Mm-hmm. That can be a very stressful thing. When parents suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, these are some of the things that we looked at to show that when these families, as we all know, poor families in the United States face so many challenges in across many different mm-hmm. dimensions. And so given all the stress that they're facing, it's not surprising that a lot of them are more likely to be overweight than children not experiencing that stress. Mm-hmm. So I think the different ways that we can decrease children's stress would be fantastic, whether it be – I'm a big fan of social safety net programs. If a family has access to supplemental nutrition assistance program, SNAP, formerly known as the food stamp program, that helps reduce their stress, that helps reduce obesity. Another factor would be National School Lunch Program. Having this in the schools helps alleviate the stress that these families face. Mm-hmm. At least they get one good meal, or I'm not sure if your schools have school breakfast programs. Mm-hmm. That's another fantastic program. Reducing stress, giving kids great meals, and that's good. Yeah.
Let me just quickly introduce again the guest for this hour of Focus. Craig Gunderson is here. He's professor in the Department of Agricultural and Consumer Economics here at U of I. Wendy Starwalt is the coordinator for elementary physical education for Unit 4 schools. Cheryl McIntyre is principal of Northeast Elementary School in Danville. We're talking about what some of the schools here in the area are doing to try to help kids learn more healthy habits, be more active, and they're also making an effort to offer if they do offer lunch or breakfast to kids at school, to offer them healthy alternatives. Questions are welcome. I have somebody here ready to go. We're here this morning, of course, on WILL AM. We're also online at will-talk. WILL.illinois.edu. That's the website. And then if you want to send in an email, you can do that at will-talk@illinois.edu. We do have somebody here to talk with on our line number one, somebody calling in from Champaign. We'll go right there. Hello.
Yes, I apologize because I've come late to this discussion. Have you talked about physical activity and music education?
We really haven't. Do you have something to offer on that?
Well, it's just that I know in Unit 4 schools, the elementary music teachers for the past couple of years have been working on this really great pedagogy called Education Through Music. And I know you have a Unit 4 person there. Does mm-hmm. that person know anything about this?
Yeah. Actually, you're right. In their adoption that they did about 3 years ago, the Education Through Music is actually a movement music program. So there is a lot of movement. There's a lot of body percussions, a lot of rhythms. It is not your traditional sit down and sing or play instruments. Kids are very active. We are excited about that, of course, in our building because that's just extra activity time for our students. It's a wonderful program, and even some classroom teachers have gone to the training so that they could take it in the classroom and add activity in the classroom and just love the program. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I believe it was Abby Kroll at Booker T, and I think that woman alone has done such a great thing for music education in our community and also with the movement aspect of it. Okay, thanks a lot. I just wanted to see if that got talked about.
All right, great. Well, thanks for the call. Other questions, comments are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. I wanted to come back to Craig Gunderson here for a moment and talk about the federal school lunch program. And it's something that's been in the news recently, and I want to ask you about that because the Obama administration proposed some changes, and they would have been the first changes in a long time, and the idea was to try to provide healthier alternatives. And this was defeated by Congress, and I think a lot of people were really concerned about this. Now, I know that you have a slightly different take on this issue, and maybe you would say to people, well, maybe you shouldn't be so upset about what happened with this. So what's your take on all of this?
Okay. Before I talk about this, I wanted to preface it with, you know, just these programs that Wendy and Cheryl are doing are fantastic. I'm really – it's a positive development and stuff. And fortunately, in some schools, we have the ability to afford – to do programs like this. A lot of other schools are struggling. They have faced many, many problems when they're school. For example, the No Child Left Behind Act made schools have to spend more time in academics, so some of these things. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the National School Lunch Program, is that we recently did a study that was published in Journal of Econometrics where we compared children who are receiving the National School Lunch, free or reduced National School Lunch Program versus eligible children who did not receive this program. What we found is that children who received the National School Lunch Program are far less likely to be obese than children who did not receive the meal. So in other words, the current structure of the National School Lunch Program is doing a fantastic job at reducing obesity in the United States. I mean, you're right, is that there haven't been a lot of changes recently, but overall, the meals are probably healthier than what kids would bring in from outside. Mm-hmm. Programs proposed by the Obama, I mean, I'm not saying that those are bad programs. I'm an economist. I don't want to take any position on whether or not. But we do have to look at the fact that these programs are more expensive. A lot of schools today are struggling to have enough food. And whenever you mandate, you have to do this, you have to do that, that money's got to come from somewhere else. So in thinking about this, we have to say the National School Lunch Program has been very successful at reducing obesity. It doesn't mean it can't do a better job, but let's not think that it's a cause of obesity. In fact, it reduces obesity.
Yeah, okay. I'm interested in particularly, I want to ask Cheryl McIntyre, because I have heard about places where schools are, they have really been trying to work hard in offering healthier food to the kids. And that one of the things that you hear from administrators is that that actually ends up being a lot more expensive for them. And that's a real problem when you look at how much per, you know, what they can feed a child for, you know, X amount of dollars per child. And they're only get in their budget, they only have that much. And that to do things like to have more fresh fruits and vegetables and whole grain products and more healthy stuff, it actually gets a lot more expensive. And I just wonder what your experiences have been with that at your school.
Yes. They have calculated that it's about 15% more to serve our menu at Northeast than it is with the other buildings, although they are slowly adding some of our menu to the other buildings, but it is about a 15% increase. Our superintendent has been just committed to this project and what we've done at Northeast, and he has found ways to cover that cost, but it is more costly. We've had conversations about where do you pay that? You know, do you pay it here or do you pay it later in life as health problems occur for children as adults? And we've just made that commitment at Northeast that we would find the way to do it, and we certainly are appreciative of that.
Mm. So what kind of experiences have you had with this one in Champaign?
Our food director currently has made pretty amazing changes in the lunch in the past 2 years. This is her second year in the district. She has had the most impact since I've been with the district, and I have tried to work for years on making changes. Like, she has choices between a sugared cereal and providing a whole grain non-sugared cereal in the morning. And the cost of that doesn't change. And so it became a matter of her making better choices for our kids, and she has done that, and it's been amazing. I'm sure there is more cost to the fresh fruits and vegetables that she's providing, but I believe the trade-off has got to be worth it. And the kids actually love the fresh fruit. I mean, they haven't, just to put an apple on their tray, they'll eat the apple. I mean, they truly do enjoy it. So I would agree with Craig, too. I can't say that school lunch or school breakfast is turning our children or creating the obesity problem for our children. I'm in the lunchroom all the time. We work hard in our lunchroom to talk to kids about their foods and educate them as they're eating. Kids who bring their own lunch, we have a lot of parents who I can tell are well educated in nutrition, and those kids have fantastic lunches. But there are some lunches that should not happen, and a child would be better off eating the school lunch. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, what in a case like that, what do you do? What can you do?
Well, we talk directly to the child about what are some better choices that they could make to bring into their lunch and try to encourage them. We also hold something called Lucky Tray Day, where if you're eating a healthy food, you get a raffle ticket. At the end, we raffle off pedometers or jump ropes or something, or water bottles, to help encourage kids to try some of these things. Because when you're young, it is difficult to try things that are unusual and healthy and fresh. It's just not appealing to their palate necessarily. But we try to encourage it. And hopefully, you know, the parents also, I think, work hard to do that on their end.
And over at your school in Danville, the changes that you've made, the kids have also accepted that? They're happy to have what you're serving?
They really have. In fact, I think kids are so much more flexible than we give them credit for. You know, initially, I think parents were very concerned about, you know, what would happen and would their children eat lunch. And you know, for example, we don't have chocolate milk anymore. We haven't for a long time. It had too many calories to meet the criteria. Our kids just don't think about that anymore. They have 100% fruit juice as a choice and also white milk. But they just kind of roll with it. And we think that we've done a good job of still feeding them and having them make those choices.
Well, we're talking this morning about what's going on here in some of the schools in our region as places think very seriously about the health of students and do what they can to help them move more and eat in a more healthy way. We'll talk some more after a very short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, comic Louis C.K. talks about some of the real experiences he's drawn on for his stand-up comedy and his FX series Louis. Time magazine just named Louis the best TV show of the year. GQ named Louis C.K. the comic genius of the year. He has a new stand-up comedy special that he's decided to make available only on his website. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Your individual membership gifts are vital to our current programming. However, long-term funding is needed to carry WILL into the future. A legacy gift through your estate can help continue the same quality programming and service that you enjoy for the generations yet to come. For information on how you can provide for Illinois Public Media's future, call Donda Beard at 217-333-7300.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you listening, perhaps watching. We're on WILL AM. Also, you can see us. We're webcasting this morning, so go to our website. That's WILL.illinois.edu. Tomorrow morning on the program, we'll have something that certainly connects with what we're talking about today. It's our monthly show on nutrition. Susan Kundrat will be the guest. Celeste Quinn is the host. She is a nutritionist, founder and president of Nutrition on the Move, and they'll be concentrating on things you can do to manage your weight and eat lightly over the winter. And, of course, general questions on nutrition are certainly welcome, too. Also tomorrow, Rich Warren will be with us. He writes a regular column on consumer electronics for the News Gazette newspaper and occasionally is here. And we talk about what's new in the way of consumer electronics. And there's always something new, and it's very confusing. So if you're thinking about bringing something new into your home, we can give you a little bit of advice. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics every week. You can look at the schedule by going to WILL.illinois.edu. And here in the studio with us this morning, we have three guests. Cheryl McIntyre, she's principal of Northeast Elementary School in Danville, a school that has received some national recognition for working on the health of its students, trying to get them moving, think in a more healthy way, eat in a more healthy way. Wendy Starwalt is here. She's coordinator for elementary physical education for Unit 4 schools and is also coordinator for the CATCH program at Carrie Busey School in Champaign. And that is a partnership that they have formed with the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. And it's essentially the same kind of things that they're doing over there in Danville, is trying to get students and their families to be active and to think in more healthy ways and to eat in more healthy ways. And also here next to me is Craig Gunderson. He's professor in the Department of Agricultural and Consumer Economics at the U of I. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I just want to give Craig an opportunity just maybe to say a couple of things about ITOP, because you said you really particularly wanted to be identified with that, a research effort to try to figure out what exactly is going on with kids and weight.
Well, I want to be associated with that. Yeah, I'm always proud to be associated with this. I do research in other areas too, but I did want to. I believe you contacted ITOP to ask for a speaker for those. Before turning to that, I wanted to make a brief comment.
Yeah,
is that
sure,
fine?
Sure. Oh,
is
yeah.
I wanted to again praise the work that Cheryl and Wendy are doing. I think this work is important, even if it has no impact on obesity. I think in our society we have to begin thinking about what's healthy food, what is healthy activities, things like this. It may not have any impact on obesity. In fact, I would imagine it probably won't have much impact on obesity because there's so many other things going on. Back to your comment about calories in, calories out. That's definitely true, but for some people, a calorie in and a calorie out have very different ramifications as to what their weight gain or weight loss might be for that. So I think that encouraging healthiness is just important in and of itself. Right now, we're framing everything in terms of obesity, and I think we need to move beyond that and just say, boy, having kids active is great. Even if they don't lose any weight, it's fantastic to do that. So I just wanted to point that out. And sure, this is something to come back to draw this back into ITOP, is that we're trying to take a broader perspective on obesity in the United States and to begin to say, you know, what are the different policies that we could implement? What different genetics play a role in this? If genetics, insofar as it does play a role, what can we do with respect to that? What sorts of intervention programs? And we're looking at this. And part of the ITOP program is that we're sponsoring every year for students to go to our PhD program in this system. The funding from this comes from USDA as part of their overall initiative to reduce childhood obesity and encourage better health and well-being amongst children.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm sure that you all feel, because you're involved in schools, that probably you feel that you're very well positioned to address the issue, but also because the kids are in your care for many hours every day and every week, and that it seemed that thinking about their health should be a natural thing. Now, I don't know if it always has been a natural thing. Do you think that you're thinking in new ways, or maybe you're thinking more about this now than you did?
I think absolutely. You know, we look at it every day. When teachers make lesson plans and they're looking at what their week looks like, they're making sure that they're incorporating that physical activity, that they're teaching health education as a part of a regular academic subject. For example, you could walk into a first or second grade classroom and they're learning how to write a paragraph, and that paragraph is tied to something to do with health and wellness. So you're incorporating those two things together. I think, you know, when people say to me, how do you get started? And I say, you know, look at your school meals. What are you serving? I think that's the first thing. And stop using food as rewards. We don't need to reward children with food. You know, our kids love to go outside again for an extra 10 minutes of recess, and we use that as a reinforcement a lot. So it's those little things that I think we didn't look at before. You know, candy and cupcakes and all those things we just took for granted. We don't need those things. And there are other things to help our kids.
Yeah. I wonder in Champaign, how you're thinking of health? I'm sure that there always was some kind of health curriculum.
And
they've always had physical education. Yeah. What sets our school apart and Northeast apart is it is a focus that we wrap ourselves around throughout the day and spend a lot of time trying to influence the community of our school, of Carrie Busey parents and grandparents and every extended part of the family to also be a part of the program. So it is unique in that sense, and it takes an effort. It takes a coordinator. So, and this is actually a change that we're seeing with physical educators. A physical educator taking the role as the health and wellness coordinator for a building and the community that surrounds that building. That's unique. And that's kind of the movement that we're seeing happening in programs. So we are using that model really to have an influence throughout the building. You know, whether it be a birthday celebration, we also have eliminated any kind of reward with food, that there are other ways to celebrate and enjoy each other, and that those kind of celebrations with food can be done in different ways. And I think it's great for kids to see that and learn that and take that kind of information home with them.
So how did you get involved in this relationship with the public health district?
Well, the coordinated approach to child health program, they became interested in, and then we talked and they asked, would you be interested in trying this? And it just took off, and it was a grassroots effort. If you do not have classroom teachers and a staff who are willing to jump in and say, yeah, we really want to do this, you cannot go it alone. So I think both of our buildings obviously have some kind of grassroots effort because all of us support the program. So that's how the relationship started. And they have, you know, they have offered us all kinds of support with interns and programs and financial support to help get our program off the ground. The great thing is this is a sustainable program. It doesn't cost a fortune to implement this. It takes a coordinator to implement it. It does not take a whole lot of dollars to do it. So everyone could get on board with this easily.
Yeah. Something that I think that you probably have both done too, that I think it's kind of exciting, is that you have tried to create opportunities for families to get involved in this too, so that it's not just something that the children are doing when they're at school, but that you have tried to make times when parents could come in, either some event that happens outside school,
right,
or maybe even using school facilities, have an opportunity for parents to come in, and whether it's just walking or running or doing something physical, to have parents and their children do some things together.
Right. Yeah, we
both last fall and this fall offered a 3K on a Saturday morning. This year we did a healthy tailgate. We did one tailgate with fresh fruit, one with fresh vegetable, one with whole grains, and then Milk Mustache Pictures with Justin Bieber, well, the cutout of Justin Bieber. The kindergarten thought
Justin
wasn't there. No, they thought he was coming, which I had to renege on that. But and that was for families and friends, anybody that the kids wanted to bring. It was a short little run, and then the tailgate afterward. And actually, by hosting that event, we were given $4,000 from the National Football League for the Fuel Up to Play 60 because we offered that event to our kids and community for us to support and move forward and do something in the spring along the same lines to support physical activity and nutrition. So it had a great payoff on that actual day, and now we can even move forward and do something else with our kids. But having the parents involved, the kids love it.
Yeah. And I think that was key to our parents really accepting it, is being involved and seeing what fun we have. Our fundraisers are now related to health and wellness. We don't sell things. We have in the fall our Friday Football Frenzy that we go out in the yard and kids have get pledges for health and wellness, and we do all sorts of football activities. And then in the spring, we do our walk-a-thon and have music, and the parents are there, and they just see that it's fun and the kids have enjoyed it. And I think that's been an important piece of them buying into what we're doing, yeah, is the fun aspect of it.
Yeah, I think that I read about some work that was being done at University of Illinois Chicago, and this comes back, I guess, to the idea that there's got to be a strong educational component to this. And I thought it was interesting because it goes back to this argument that, well, the big problem is kids spending time in front of some screen. And there was a concern that maybe kids who were spending time in front of the computer or the television and maybe doing a lot of unhealthy snacking, well, that would explain to you why they may be getting heavier. But I think what was really interesting about this was there was a big question about, well, I'm sure that's an issue, but they wanted to look at what kind of messages, particularly in advertising, kids were getting about health and food and diet and nutrition, and how that actually entered into it. And I thought that's really interesting because it was more than just, again, lack of activities. It's, well, what, you know, how are you thinking about it?
Right. That would probably be potentially a factor. The thing I always like to point out, though, is that when we were kids, I mean, like in the 1970s when I was a kid, the advertising was much worse than it is today. I mean, you didn't see any sort of promotion like the NFL Play 60. You wouldn't see nothing like that on TV. And Tony the Tiger was not encouraging you to go outside and exercise. So in other words, is that I think these are important, but at the same time is that it's got to know, if we're going to think about how we explain changes in obesity, is those aren't really explanations because things haven't gotten worse over the past 20 years. I'm not saying they don't play a role, but I just think we have to think about, are things different today? I don't know. I think, like, National School Lunch Program, I think meals are healthier today than they were when I was a kid.
Well, what do you think about the big, though, about the educational component? That is, you know, say you've got a class and it's English time and you're teaching how to write a paragraph, but the theme is some kind of theme about health and nutrition. I mean, do you think something like that really is going to make very much difference?
I think it's fantastic. I think these programs are fantastic. But let's not tie it to obesity. Let's just tie it to being healthy. I mean, we all know there's a lot of evidence out there that underweight people actually are in worse health than normal weight or overweight. And there's a lot of evidence that people who are overweight but exercise and are active are actually healthier than people who are of healthy weight and don't exercise. So in other words, all these things that are encouraging people to be active, they're important in and of itself. So I think as a society, we have to stop stigmatizing obesity, talking about obesity, and instead move forward and let's talk about health and things like that and move beyond the obesity issue, especially given how stigmatizing obesity is. Yeah.
Well, we have some callers here. I'm told we have somebody calling from Carrie Busey School.
Great.
And so let's see what they have to say from fourth graders at Carrie Busey. Hi, who am I talking to?
Hi, this is Ms. Slifer. My fourth grade class is watching right now on the smart board, but they wanted to make a comment about what we do at Carrie Busey, so I'm going to put on a student.
Great.
Hi, I'm Lily from Carrie Busey Elementary.
Yes, sweetie, it would help if you spoke up a little bit. We're kind of having a hard time hearing you.
Hi, I'm Lily from Carrie Busey School, and I love the being healthy and being a catch school at school. We always love to play kickball outside at recess.
Louder.
Okay. So what do you think about the food that they give you there at school?
It's very healthy. Very healthy. And it's very nice to have everything very healthy instead of eating junk food.
And are some of the things that you have learned at school, have you gone home and said to your parents, well, maybe it would be a good thing if we did something different at home?
Yes. Yes, I have.
She actually has.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks very much. Thanks for talking with us. Is there somebody else maybe there who would like to talk with us a little bit? Maybe not. Okay, I'll tell you what. Well, thanks very much to the fourth graders. We'll say hi. We'll wave to the fourth graders at Cara Busey. We have about 5-6 minutes left here on the program, and we have some other callers here, and we'd be very happy to hear from folks, or if you want to send us an email. So 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and the email will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's talk with someone in Peoria, and we'll go over there. Line number 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I like that play-by-play from a school. That's pretty good. Hey, listen, you know, the problem is it seems to me we're giving up PE in all these schools for the curriculum, for the education part of it. And I know where I'm from, they basically can PE in general because they want more education, and I think that's wrong. I grew up with it. It was one of the mainstays of our schools. And I think, you know, everybody's focusing on what the kids eat at school versus the PE. There's no exercise because what do they do when they get home? They're studying. Study, 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 study. That's what I see. My kids have gone that way. I mean, now that they're all growing up in college or out of college, I see that with my neighbor's kids. It's insane, you know, for the education part of it. They need to go out and exercise. They're not getting it. And no matter what kind of food you put in them, if they're not exercising, it does nobody any good. And I was curious about what your comment would be, and I'll get off and listen.
Okay.
And
well,
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Well, I'm sure you won't get any disagreement from the panel about
wow,
the importance
what a great
of
call.
Exercise. maybe the two of you would have some perspective on this. Have there been a lot of school districts where they've just completely cut physical education, where they don't have it anymore?
Across the country, that has been a trend of cutting physical education. Not in Illinois, we're mandated to have physical education, and thank goodness that mandate has never gone away, and we've kept it and supported it here. But across the country, that has happened a lot, and it is the push for academics. And the sad part is that academics can improve with physical activity. Dr. Hillman right here at the University of Illinois can support that, and why our educators aren't looking at that research and saying, if we had physical activity, we would help our academics and not actually hinder our academics in school. That message has to get stronger out there now.
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely anything we do in a school is there's some major trade-offs. And what we've found is that schools that are faring worse on the No Child Left Behind mandates cut back on physical activities. And partly because they spend more time studying. So if you think about some of these trade-offs, is you have to think, well, if the academics are not doing as well, what can we cut back on? Or if our school is facing serious budget cutbacks, what do we cut back on? So all these things are trade-offs, so we have to recognize how these are. And in the context of physical education, it might be something oftentimes easy to cut, like often a lot of schools cut music programs as well. And so,
right. Yeah.
Well, and that's why we worked really hard knowing that to meet the standard for the Alliance that we needed to have 30 minutes of PE a day. And kind of a unintended bonus to that was that, you know, we took a half of a class and put it with another PE class. And then that classroom teacher was able to work with a smaller group of kids on academics and then switched out. So as we work through that schedule, we are able to accomplish two things on both sides of this debate.
Yeah, okay. I want to make sure we have one more caller here. I want to get in Pontiac, line number 2. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
This is also interesting. Of course, I did lots of exercising as a kid, just going walking to school and all that. But when we hit high school, we didn't. And my parents, none of my parents exercised. My parents' generation, maybe one guy I knew played tennis on a regular basis. We ate fried food about every other night. I had fried pork chops, fried chicken once a week, and we didn't get overweight. And I'm really confused. I mean, we had butter in our household. We didn't have margarine. I get really confused as to why and what kind of level our food industry plays in all this today, because I think there's a lot more things in food that seem to help contribute, at least. I wonder what you had to say about that.
Well, I don't know if
that's a great question for the nutritionist tomorrow, because I often think the same thing, like grandparents eating baked goods, but everything was made from scratch. And I do wonder if, and Craig, maybe you know some of this, you know, the argument of the high fructose corn syrup, is that contributing? Are some of the processed foods really contributing to this problem more than we are even imagining?
I don't know. I think that there are several things that are true. I think that it is true that people eat more meals away from home than they probably did decades ago. Rather than essentially having three meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, people are doing an awful lot of grazing and snacking in between. I know it's true that people nowadays consume a lot of calories in liquid form, whether that be soft drinks or gigantic lattes. So I think it may also have to do maybe with the patterns of how much people eat. I don't know if average daily caloric intake is actually more than it was, but I think that people definitely are eating differently than they were 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah. No, I mean, people definitely are eating differently today than they used to. And it's not clear all the different things are going on. But one thing is the cost of food is much lower than it used to be, which is fantastic because it means then that there's fewer people going hungry in our country. Thinking about trade-offs, food is cheaper. Mm-hmm. It means a lot of these families before that would have been suffering from food insecurity and hunger and really struggling now have enough food to eat because food prices have gone down. But that also changes the composition of how much people can eat. So that's one explanation about how things have changed over time. But again, also, if you look at the number of children who walk to school, it's much lower than it used to be, as an example. There's many different factors that go into it.
So it could really be that people, that the physical activity, maybe people think back to that time, they think, well, people weren't constantly running around and doing rock climbing. But maybe, in fact, their physical activity was more than it is now.
Right. And a lot of jobs used to be much, much less sedentary than they are today. I mean, that's another fact, at least with adults.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're at the point where we're going to have to finish up. And I think that the suggestion was a good one. If you have nutrition questions, every month we do a show on this topic with a registered dietitian, Susan Kundrat, who is here on the program to answer that very kind of question. And she's going to be on the program tomorrow morning in the 10 o'clock hour. Celeste Quinn will be the host. So we'll have some more talk generally on the topic of managing weight and eating lightly over the winter. But anybody who has questions on diet and nutrition should feel welcome to call. So that's tomorrow right here on the station. We also want to say thanks very much to our guests, Craig Gunderson from the College of ACES here at the U of I, Wendy Starwalt, she's coordinator for elementary PE for Unit 4 schools, and also Cheryl McIntyre, she's principal of Northeast Elementary School in Danville. Thank you all very much for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.